my name's Nicole and I'm an alcoholic. And my recovery date is February 22nd, 2017. So I actually have 4 years sober. Sorry, Chris. But yeah. Anyway, so I started at AR in February of 2017, but before all that, obviously I was born. So I was born in August of 1974, and my parents were, you know, just parents, whatever, and I had a sister and a mom and a dad, and, you know, a really normal upbringing and whatnot. And I started drinking when I was probably 15, and I guess now as I'm sober and I reflect back more and I kind of see things, I kind of understand now a little bit more as to why I began to drink. And, you know, I think a lot of it had to do with social anxiety, not feeling like I always fit in, not knowing, you know, where I was going in life, who I really was, all those things. Yeah, I remember the first time I get drunk, I was, like I said, 15. It was New Year's Eve, and I was at a friend's family's New Year's Eve party, and her parents allowed us to get drunk. I don't really know what exactly happened there, but we were, like, hammered, and I was like, this is pretty amazing. Like, I like how this feels, and so... I mean, it just became a regular occurrence ever, like, going forward from there. I drank, you know, off and on. I'm the mother of three daughters. So obviously when I was pregnant, I wasn't drinking, but, you know, I don't remember, with the exception of those times, like continuous sobriety from the age of 15 on. So, yeah. I mean, it got bad. I mean, there were some times, I mean, I can tell stories upon stories upon stories upon stories about things that I did, things that I was embarrassed of, people that I hurt, you know, how I hurt myself. I mean, there's just so many different things that I could talk about, but yeah. So I decided to get sober in February of 2017. I had been having this, like, crazy amount of weight loss, and I wasn't exactly sure what was going on in my life. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm pretty sure that I have cancer. And, like, we were going to have me checked out at the Mayo Clinic. Like, everything was all figured out, and I knew for sure that it was just something terrible, never once thinking that it had anything to do with the alcohol or anything else in my life, but probably knowing all along in the back of my head it did. So I had gone to the hospital for the final time, and I had told them, you know, that I was going to the Mayo Clinic and everything else, and they were like, well, maybe we should have you checked. You know, we can do, like, a colonoscopy. We can do all these things while you're here. So I allowed them to do all those things. And at that point, the doctor actually said to me when I got done with the colonoscopy, he's like, well, you know, if you would stop drinking, your life might be a little bit different. And I'm like, fuck you. I'm not going to stop drinking. You know, I didn't want to give it up. You know, I wasn't sure what to do. So fast forward to, like, around Valentine's Day, and somebody pissed me off at work. I was working at Target at the time, and I told that person that I wasn't going to show up for my shift, and I was pissed off, and they, I don't know, things just went haywire, and I knew that things were getting really, really bad, and I was supposed to be on this medicine, and I wasn't allowed to drink on this medicine, and I remember I was like, fuck it, I'm still gonna drink, and, like, I threw out the medicine, and I was in such a dark, dark place, and when people talk about your bottom, that was, like, 100% totally my bottom. I mean, like, it was just so ugly, and, like, Donald Trump had just won the presidency, and, like, I remember I was like posting all over Facebook about, you know, being raped, and it was just terrible. And my sister's like, you were raped. It was just awful. It was terrible. It was just an awful time. And so this lady made me mad at work, and I threw away the meds that I was supposed to be taking. And I went and I got like hammered. I mean, it was terrible. And I remember like the next morning I woke up and I said something to my husband because I didn't show up for my shift at work. I didn't do what I was supposed to do. And I remember saying to him, you know, I really think that I probably need to go to treatment. And he was like, what are you talking about? You know, because he didn't know how bad it was. Well, I mean, I think he knew, but I think he didn't want to admit it. You know, I think we all can relate to that. So he, I went online and thankfully, because I had all these medical mystery problems, I had already like bought or done all my deductible for the year. So I found this place that was in Minnesota, and that's where I was going to go. And so I get on the airplane, I fly out to Minnesota to go, and like it's all emotional. Again, I have three children. So I have a daughter, and I mean, at the time, I guess they were 16, 13, and 11. So I like fly out to Minnesota, you know, everybody's crying, whatever. I get out there, I get inside the car, and I ask the guy, I said, okay, so, and I don't even know why this had been brought up to me or why it had registered, but I said to him, I said, so is this place run by Scientologists? And they said, they were like, yeah. And so I was like, what the fuck? I'm not going to this place. I was like, turn the car around. So he wouldn't turn the car around. And I was like, I'll call the police if you don't take me back. So anyway, I call my husband from the airport and I'm like, I'm coming back home tonight. I'm like, he's like, I knew you weren't going to do treatment. So it was like this whole like cluster fuck of a mess. And so, I was like, no, I'm still going to do treatment. I'll figure it out. So I flew back to Missouri that same night and I talked to some friends from high school. And one of my friends from high school had gone to Austin Recovery when it was located somewhere else, but it was still Austin Recovery. And she had said, I really think that you would like this place. And I think that you would probably, you know, mesh well there. And I thought, why not? I like Austin. They have a cool airport. I'll go there. So I decided to go and there I went and I arrived there and boy, did my life ever change. I didn't really know what to expect when I was in treatment. So, you know, I had kind of thought, what is this going to be like? Like, is it going to be like jail, which I've never been to jail. So I don't know why I was afraid it was going to be like jail, but I was like, is it going to be like jail? Is it going to be like prison? You know, are the people going to be mean? Is the food going to be gross? Is it going to be like Promises in Malibu? Like, what's going to happen here? And so, you know, I get there and I get checked in and I'm like, I don't know about all this. I just don't know. And I mean, I was like in my 40s, you know, so like, and here I am and like everybody's so young and like, you know, I don't know. It was insane. So I get there and I get to my first room and they're like, you're going to have to climb up on a bunk bed. And I'm like, I can't climb up on a bunk bed. So they're like, well, then we're going to have to move your room. So they move me to this other room and you can tell everybody's irritated that I have to be in that room then. And I'm like, oh Jesus. So I just remember I didn't unpack for forever because I was like, I'm going to just finish this in like 12 days and I don't need to unpack. So I didn't unpack, I didn't do anything, and then like it was kind of like the healing began. So I remember a lot during that time, and one of like, I don't know, there was a bunch of different classes we could take, and back then, I don't know if they still do it or not, but we did Musical Journey, and we had Maurice, and she totally changed my life. I mean, like everything that she talked about and did and practiced and preached. I mean, it changed my life. And I think that was the very first time that I began to heal. And I remember sitting in that class and, you know, doing it all and like listening and hearing, you know, just hearing the music and like, you know, the thoughts rolling through my head and everything else. And I remember at the end, like when you go and you color, you know, you like draw out what you saw. And I remember I drew out like this bird like coming out of stuff. And I'll never forget. She said, "That's like the phoenix rising from the ashes." And I was like, "What?" And I was like, so then I like went and looked at the story, whatever. And at that point, it was kind of like, okay, I probably can do this, you know? So I remember when I was there, like people would get up and they would talk and stuff, and they had like 20 years or, you know, 15 years or whatever. And I was like, I can't even put 15 days together. So like, I can't imagine having 20, 30 years, you know, I mean, like, that's just crazy to me. And so I remember that I had told my husband, I came home after 30 days, you know, and I was like, okay, let's do this. This is going to be great. Happy. You're still in the pink cloud, you know, everything's great. And I remember coming home and I told him, I said, if I go 6 months, can I go back down to Austin to get my 6 month marble? You know, because I live in St. Louis, I guess I should say that. So, and my husband was like, well, okay, let's see where we are in 6 months. Like, if you're actually working a program, if you're doing something, let's see where you are. So, I remember I did 90 in 90 days. Like, I worked it. I worked it hard, and I was excited, and then I got a job, like, working with at-risk youth, and I did an IOP program, and I was like, this is pretty cool, you know? Like, I felt really, really good about myself for the very first time, and I don't know how long, you know? And so, but when you're at home and, you know, and you're listening to things and things are going on, you slowly start to learn that people that you've been at rehab with are now relapsing, you know? And so you're like, well, that's kind of weird. Like, you know, relapse was never really in my head. Like, I never thought that I would relapse, because I was like, my husband told me, you get one shot at this. And like, if you relapse, like, we can't do this again. You know, I mean, like, you get to go one time. And so I started hearing about all these people relapsing, and I'm like, oh, that's really sad. Gee, that's really sad. And then we ended up losing someone. She passed away. And she had been part of our crew or litter, whatever you call it. And, that was the very first time that I really realized that, okay, you know, even though you're living in this little pink bubble and everything sunshines and rainbows, people do die from addiction. Like, I mean, I'd seen intervention, like I knew this kind of shit, but I didn't, the magnitude of it didn't really hit me until Amanda passed away. And I was like, this is absolutely insane. And so, that's when I really buckled down and I knew I needed to do 90 meetings, 90 days. I just had to do what AR had told me, you know, like I had to follow through with the tools that they had given me, because they gave me so many tools and they gave me a gift that I can't ever repay or ever thank them enough for. It's such a gift. I mean, like, it's awesome. It's a gift, and I'm blessed every single day that I'm sober. And, you know, I can't thank them enough. Like, I can't. And I know that it probably annoys Chris that I'm like, I'm going to come and talk again on my anniversary every single year, but I want to do it because it's a goal for me. And like, it makes me want to continue to be sober, you know? And, I was talking with Jeannie about this on Friday night, I think, and I had told her, I said, you know, we, herself and myself, and she can tell you her story, obviously, in a little bit, but, you know, we've been very blessed because we're surrounded by people who want to see us succeed at being sober. So, like, you know, I can't imagine, like, having left AR and going back, like, out on the streets and, like, seeing people and people being like, ah, fuck that, you know, come on, you can use again, it's okay, don't worry, you know, whatever. I cannot imagine going back to a world like that, but I know that that's how worlds are, you know. But I was saying to Jeannie, I was like, you know, I'm just so grateful that I have people like Jeannie or my close friends back home in my corner, because I know if I was to ever say to one of them, oh, I think I'm going to just try to have a drink again, they would kick my ass. Like, everybody would, like, beat the shit out of me. Like, everybody would be like, you're not going to do that. Like, there is absolutely no way that you're going to throw away what you have done and all that you have accomplished. And I really did. I mean, like, I had to let go of some people. You know, I mean, that was just how it kind of went. You got to let go of some people. And I'm grateful for the people that I was able to let go of, the people that, you know, weren't always there in my corner. And I kind of learn every day more and more the people that are there in my corner and the people that want to build me up and not tear me down. Because there's going to be a lot of people when you come back out and, you know, they're going to want you to fall or go back to the way they are, or they're so miserable, they want to see you be sad with them, you know? But like, it's so very important that you just find that core group of people that are going to support you and say, look, we've got your back regardless. And if you pick up and if you use again, we're all going to kick your ass and like mean it. Cause like, I don't know. I don't want to get my ass kicked. I'm afraid of it. So, anyway, but yeah, so now I'm very, very blessed, for the past, well, since 2019, I got my certified peer specialist through the state of Missouri. So, I'm a recovery coach and I get to work with the program there and it's called EPIC. And we go into hospitals and when people overdose on heroin, we're the first face that they see. And we're just a team of recovery coaches. There's 13 in my area that do it. And we get to get those people into treatment and started on MAT. So like Suboxone, Sebutex, methadone, whatever they decide to do. And it's awesome and it's cool. And, you know, you get to see people that actually do recover. And I get to see people that don't. And I know that it helps to keep me sober because, you know, I get to see people changing their lives every single day. And I get to give back. And that for me has been the biggest part. Like I had to do something where I gave back because if I didn't, I knew that I would relapse. Like I can't, obviously I can't use and do my job, you know, like I can't do that. So working in recovery was the smartest decision for me. And, earlier this year I got, my Reiki like master. So I'm going to start practicing that more. And I learned about that while I was at AR also. So I'm going to start practicing that more. And I want to open up my own studio. And like, I want to be able to help people in recovery because that was a huge part of my recovery. Again, I believe AR taught me so much about, you know, alternative ways to be able to recover, like from the different things from like, you know, when they used to do acupuncture and all of that. I mean, I just learned so much there and through the 12 steps and through that, I don't know, that ranch out in Buda, Texas. I mean, like it changed my life. And so I'm forever grateful for it. I'm grateful for Chris and I'm grateful that he allows me to come back and talk. And I'm grateful for all the friends that I made. And Jeannie and I, today we met up with two other people that we went to treatment with and they both seem to be doing good. They've kind of each taken a little different path and, you know, it was good to see them and, you know, and to hear about them being clean still. And, you know, some of them have had some setbacks, but whatever, it doesn't matter how many times you fall, just get back up. Who cares? Like nobody cares. So, anyway, but I'm going to introduce Jeannie now and, she has been one of my dearest friends since we met. We bonded over Real Housewives and how ridiculous we thought like all the craziness was. And we have remained good friends and we talk every Sunday night during 90 Day Fiance. And yeah, so we keep it real and we keep it together and she helps to keep me sober and yeah, I'm so proud of her, and she has 4 years, too. So, Jeannie, take it away.
Well, thank you for that introduction, Nicole, and lovely job. Thank you. So, hi, guys. My name is Jeannie. I, too, am an alcoholic. I'm also an addict. I also attended AR in February of 2017, just like Nicole, for 30 days, and I also just hit 4 years sober on the 25th of February, so pretty crazy that that much time has passed since we've been there, and so many things have changed, not only at AR, but just in the world in general. And just we've been through a whole nother election, put it that way. So I grew up in Tucson, Arizona. I kind of, like Nicole, consider myself to have had a pretty normal childhood. I did not have any trauma that I can associate to me becoming an alcoholic. For me, I really believe that I was always going to be an alcoholic.
What you saying?
No matter what. I think somebody's unmuted there. But yeah, I believe that I was always going to be an alcoholic no matter what. It runs in my family. So I believe that there was just no out for me. No matter what happened, I was always going to run into this path of having to either choose recovery or to choose to remain an alcoholic. I had my first drink when I was in about sixth grade, I think 11 or 12 years old. And I know that the first time I drank, looking back on it, I can say, wow, I was absolutely an alcoholic. I mean, I'm only in sixth grade and I was hanging out with older kids and I just got completely annihilated, just blackout drunk and really just kind of made a fool of myself in sixth grade. So I held off drinking for a few years after that, but then picked back up in high school. Same as Nicole, for me, I found that alcohol helped relieve my social anxiety. I was such an awkward child in my mind. And when I look back on it, I was so afraid of what other people thought of me and, you know, not fitting in or not being good enough. But I found that when I drank, I was able to conquer all of those fears. And I was suddenly, you know, able to achieve these things that I thought that I always wanted, you know, being able to talk to people and be funny and not feel awkward. Those were all things that I could find in an alcohol bottle. And so I just continued to explore how that worked all throughout high school by just, you know, drinking more, partying, having fun. Some of it was pretty typical high school fun, but reflecting back on it, I can absolutely see that I was just ramping up into becoming a full-time, full-blown alcoholic. In my high school yearbook, I was literally voted life of the party. So all you got to do is look back on that picture and there's my face, life of the party, and that kind of sums it up for my high school years. And then after going to high school, I was lucky enough to get a scholarship into college. I was actually a really intelligent, smart student that managed to pull off an academic scholarship to the University of Arizona. I had to keep a 3.33, and you can guarantee I lost that my freshman year, first, I think, semester, pretty much. I just was like, wow, I got into the dorms in college and realized I don't have anyone telling me what to do, and I can party 7 nights a week. And I did it. And some of it was normal, but none of my other friends were partying 7 nights a week. It was incredibly aggressive for a freshman girl at that. But, you know, I already had a couple fake IDs. I was already going to the bars. And, you know, it didn't even matter. I was already doing it. And by the time I was 21, it didn't. All the bartenders were like, oh, really? Well, this whole time? You know, pretty typical. But so in college, like I say, I was drinking 7 nights a week, partying all the time. I managed to get my first DUI when I was 21. You know, I'm shocked I didn't get one before that, because honestly, for us, drinking and driving was just something you did. I mean, how else would you get around? How would you get from bar to bar? I mean, you just had to drink and drive. And it was always me that was like, oh, I'll drive. I thought that was, you know, I'll help out the group. I'll drive. So for some reason, I really just was always the driver and I was always drinking. So it was absolutely inevitable that I'm going to get a DUI. So I got a DUI when I was 21. Wasn't really a big deal, just making a wide right turn or something. But anyways, I did wind up going to jail for 24 hours. And when I was 21, really my concern was, well, let's see, if I go into jail at 5 p.m. on a Friday, I'll get out at 5 p.m. on the Saturday, so then I can still go out that Saturday night. Okay, yeah, that timing will work. You know, that was my biggest concern. I, you know, begged mom and dad to help pay off whatever they could. And, you know, somehow I managed to kind of get by that first DUI with just, not many consequences, just like 24 hours in jail. Then fast forward 3 years down the road, I was living in California now and get another DUI. This one, I was really, really drunk downtown San Diego. And again, who drives in downtown San Diego? You just shouldn't do that. So get another DUI, land in jail, that time. But again, I was able to get off semi-easy on this second DUI because it was in a different state. So for me, I was always able to just get off with, you know, just a little bit of slap on the wrist there. I never had to face any big time consequences. To me, 24 hours in jail just, you know, made me a little bit more cool in my mind. So I didn't see any consequences to my actions. So I just kept going. I thought, well, you know, maybe I just won't drive anymore. That finally occurred after the second one. So then I went a little while, but then lo and behold, by the time I was 31, I managed to accrue my third DUI. This one was probably the worst of them all. I blacked out on a freeway, wound up down an on-ramp with a window smashed out. I really don't even know what happened to this day. But got picked up by the cops, taken to jail. Nobody knew where I was. Everybody was worried about me. It was pretty bad. My car wound up being totaled. But once again, it wasn't like, no, I don't need to quit drinking or anything. I mean, I just need to clean up everything else around my life to make things look better so that I can still drink. So I got a lawyer for this third DUI. I managed to have some money to put together to get a lawyer so that I was able to get off and not have to face any real consequences on this one. Because honestly, when it's at your third DUI, if any of you have had your third, you know, you can land some serious jail time for that, if not prison time. So, you know, if I hadn't gotten off as lucky as I was, I would have been in a lot of trouble. I just happened to get even luckier on this third one because now my first one was out of the 7 year zone. So I only got tried as a second time offender, but still, this was not my bottom. Third DUI didn't really seem to stop things, just kept going. I mean, I even had, was court ordered to take DUI classes, pretty standard. I even showed up to one of these DUI classes drunk and on pills. I don't even remember it. I blacked out and wound up having to be taken home by an ambulance for going to a DUI class. It just doesn't make any sense. Looking back on it, it's the most cringe-worthy thing ever. I have no idea what happened. But so what did I do? I called up and said, well, I can't come back there anymore. So bye. And I just like found a way to run away from them because I was just mortified that I had done this. But once again, was that my bottom? No. We keep going. So then somehow my boyfriend was kept himself together very much. So me, not so much. So we made a good couple in that way because he could tow me around, but he got a good job in a job offer in Austin, Texas. So I decided, what the hell, let's do it. So we both came over here to Austin, Texas. So that was about 5-6 years ago. And really when I got to Austin, that's when the alcoholic disease just really took a turn for me. Before it had always been kind of about partying and just never stopping the party, but always, you know, starting the using with a party. When I got to Austin, the using started right when I woke up in the morning. It just completely ramped up to, you know, drinking wine at 7 a.m. in the morning, champagne, literally whatever I could get my hands on. I was working a job from home. So that really made it easy for an alcoholic to just, you know, get through the day easily because, you know, I could just sit right there with my laptop and my alcohol and nobody would ever know. So I thought, but so I continued on this path. And eventually, once I started drinking in the morning, things really changed for me. I couldn't function without alcohol. It was like my gasoline. I needed it to run. I needed it to do anything. I needed it to get up. I needed it to go to sleep. I needed it for everything. But while I thought I needed it for everything, I was also becoming so physically ill from it. I was just vomiting every day, all the time. Couldn't keep any normal food down. I could really only handle gas station food for some reason. that seemed to be the only food that would sit with me. But fresh fruit and vegetables and stuff, get that away from me. You know, give me the crap. So my body was just eating itself away. It was just really sickening, I remember. And I remember one night I had been throwing up in the toilet and I was just shaking, convulsing, could barely even stay on my knees to throw up. And I had this epiphany to what I later learned was my spiritual awakening, that was just a clear vision of two roads. I was in a forest with two roads. There was one path, the path that I had been down and that I was continuing on at the moment. And that path, I knew exactly where that path led. That path led to a fourth DUI. And I knew if I get a fourth DUI, I'm going away for some serious time. I knew where that path went. The other path was a not traveled path. I did not know where this path went, but I knew that I had to take this path. I surmised that this path was only, the only way I could get down this path was to go to recovery. And before, treatment had never been an option in my mind. I had never ever thought, oh, I should just go to treatment. It was just like, no, we got to keep this party going at all costs, okay? So I had never ever thought about stopping and going to treatment. So I just had this epiphany, my spiritual awakening, and I said, all right, I'm going to do it. That's exactly what I'm going to do. This is my way out of this. This is my way out of this. So the next morning, I stayed up that whole night. Next morning, I called AR as soon as they opened. I didn't even know what I was doing, but I was just like, can I get down there? So I managed to get a bed for myself lined up the very next week and, you know, went in like Nicole, kind of blind, had no idea what I was getting myself into. But honestly, I didn't really care at that point. What was interesting for me in looking back was when I had that spiritual awakening, everything changed for me. My motivation changed. And I finally thought to myself, wow, I get to be one of those people that you see on intervention, that they do the story on them, and then 90 days later, they follow up and they're still sober and their whole life has changed and it's so magical. And it looks so cool and you're so happy for them. And I thought, wow, I get to be one of those people. And I decided I'm going to do whatever it takes to be one of those people and to have my own story. So I went in with that mindset, which was incredibly helpful to me because there's all sorts of distractions along the way that can, you know, cause you to change your thoughts of why you're there. But if you remain focused on why you want to be there in the first place, what took you there, I believe you can be successful. Because for me, when I got to Us in Recovery, I did everything you were supposed to do. I just basically like handed over the keys and was like, take me. All right, what do I do? Follow these steps, go to this time at this place. And I just did it. I did every single thing that they told me to do. I took all the resources I could from Austin Recovery. I did every activity that you could. I met Nicole. And like she said, we bonded over our love for reality TV. It was so random, but it felt so familiar at the same time. I also took Musical Journey and found it absolutely life-changing. For me, in my musical journey, I had this pivotal moment where this shaman came down and was like, Jeannie, we sent for you. And to me, it just immediately connected that was my spiritual awakening and that they had sent for me. And that's what got me there. You know, whatever you need to believe to keep going, for me, that was what I needed. Because, and I think that the reason that I was able to get these spiritual messages is because I was open to receiving them. And I think that that's one thing that made both Nicole and I really successful is that we were open to receiving whatever help, feedback, resources we could get. So I was really open to that, received that message, and just knew that I was in the right place and that I had to keep going. I started to look at myself as being chosen instead of being hindered. I looked at my recovery and me being an alcoholic as a superpower, because it's like, this person can go through this whole other life as an alcoholic and this trauma, you know, emotional trauma and everything, but then they can come out as a successful, different person. And I thought, my God, you know, like, I'm like a superhero. Like, I have this power. So I've always just really looked in, internally to harness that and realize, you know, you've been through a lot. You can do a lot more. Like, now when anything comes up and I have to face a challenge, it's like, you know, I've gotten through so much harder that I can get through this. And that's the beauty of recovery. Once you get to the other side, is that, you know, a lot of the stuff that life throws at you, it's going to be nothing compared to you getting through recovery. And so it was hard work, but it was all necessary in order for me to evolve to the next level of my life. And that's the way I looked at it. I had to evolve, meaning I had to change to get to that next level. And after treatment, what I did is I did the one time a week program, not the intensive IOP, but the one time a week. And then I had a sponsor, went to meetings, I did therapy, and I got a get well job. I had left my full-time job to go to treatment. It was a big deal, incredibly, you know, awkward and embarrassing at the time, but wound up being this beautiful thing that, you know, now I'm able to be friends with that employer still. But I got a get well job, which was delivering groceries, you know, like Instacart. And for me, that was great. It was, you know, not a lot of pressure. There is some struggles with that job, but compared to other full-time jobs, it was just great. So I could not recommend starting slow, because remember, when you come out of recovery, you're literally like an exposed nerve ending. Everything hurts. What's wrong with those people? You know, you have so many different thoughts about the world because you've changed, but the world around you hasn't necessarily changed. But just with time, things get better, things get easier. You know, I was very awkward. I remember coming out of recovery, like anyone else is, about how am I going to interact at social gatherings with people, especially if everyone else is drinking and I'm not, you know, my God, how am I going to navigate this? And, you know, to be honest, it is awkward at first, and you kind of just have to wade through the water and get through it, because each time it does get easier. And, you know, now I'm incredibly comfortable. Now you'll find me playing Flip Cup with everyone with Topo Chico. You know, you just kind of find your way to be at ease and be comfortable within your own skin. And you'll find that others are happy for you and comfortable enough, and are comfortable that you're comfortable. So if you have to fake it until you make it, you know, that's what you got to do. But now I'm living this beautiful life. I'm so lucky. You know, I'm 4 years sober now. Before I had gone into recovery into treatment, I had amassed a large amount of debt, credit card debt. I mean, from, you know, trying to fund my lifestyle, I even thought I'd go back to school. So now I have student loan debt, but I had amassed this huge amount of debt. And I've just always thought, how am I ever going to pay this off? Well, here, 4 years sober, and I only have a couple thousand left, and I'm talking, I had a lot. So I haven't done, and it's through no, you know, magic, huge amounts of money coming to me. It's just through doing the work and staying on track. So even if you find yourself, you know, under a mountain of troubles, know that you can still get there. You just keep chipping away at it. But I'm, you know, almost out of debt. I'm a co-owner of a house now. I'm actually getting married this summer. I have a full-time job. And I managed to swim 3 times a week and work out a couple others and live a healthy lifestyle. Still haven't drank. So I just can't thank, you know, the people and the team at AR enough for my experiences and, you know, all the value and love that they've showed me and Nicole, friends like Nicole I've met along the way. And I just really hope the same for everybody else that's there right now and that's going to go there. And thank you guys for letting me share my story.
Hi.
Hey,
Kim.
Holly, how are you doing?
Good.
I miss you. Hey, can you see me?
Yeah, look at me.
Hey, neighbor.